First and Now is the official BC Lions podcast. Matt Baker with you alongside Nick Kowalski, as always, recording on a Monday afternoon. Quick turnaround as the squad gets ready for a big one. And the stakes in Winnipeg Thursday will be mighty high. We'll break that all down. But Nick, great to be back with you here. And yeah, the Elks still haven't scored.
Well, you went there, hey? Yeah, it's feeling good. Like you said, short week. So it's a short week for everybody. I mean, for us too. Like, you got to get those fingers loose, and my eyeballs can't really rest them from staring at the screen all week. But that's what we signed up for. But yeah, quick turnaround to go to Winnipeg after that win in Edmonton on Saturday.
Yeah, so we'll start by talking about the victory. You can throw out whatever facts here you want. Second shutout of the season. No team has had two shutouts in the same year since 1970. The Calgary Stampeders, back in the days where they were still riding the horse into the hotel lobby. Look that up. You're way too young. So am I to have remembered that. But something special is brewing here on this defense, along with the shutouts. Four times, actually, I think now they've held the opponent to under double digits of scoring. They're going on 12 full quarters without allowing a touchdown. The last touchdown they gave up was the opening series against Montreal 3 weeks ago now. That was a 7-7 ball game before the Lions pulled away. You could start anywhere with this, Nick. Just an all-around beatdown, particularly on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and especially a couple of close calls in the fourth quarter, too, with Edmonton driving, only to be snuffed out by first a Bola Cumbo interception and then a Gary Peters interception. Also, Terry Williams returning a missed field goal out of the end zone. I'm sure that was a factor, too. And 27-1 doesn't sound as good as 27-0, obviously, right? So avoided the rouge there on that missed field goal that came up short in the fourth quarter. But they've been dominant all season. I had to check, actually, that the five touchdowns allowed is all season. I thought it was maybe an at home games or something else, but no, all season, five touchdowns allowed, which is a crazy stat, especially majority of those were coming off of turnovers in the Toronto game, right? Where they had a short, where Toronto had a short field to work with. So that even speaks more volumes to the defense. Is that, I mean, can you really find a drive? Maybe it's that one Montreal drive where a team went down the field on them. That's it. The entire year, it's really crazy to think of.
Yeah, and you talk about the missed field goal, and Terry Williams was wise to bring that out. It's funny, you look for a second, it looked like he might take the single, but then he realized, no, we have a shutout to keep going here. Who cares about the field position? Have to trust this defense. For me, remember, Edmonton's last offensive possession, I think it was, Dylan Mitchell snags a 54-yard catch and run to set Edmonton up in pretty deep field position. So they're going, oh, okay. It's just that one big play had to happen. But Gary Peters ultimately comes up with an interception to put the final stake, the final nail in the coffin, the icing on the cake, the salt in the wound, Nick. I could go all day long with these metaphors. That defense was to not be denied. It was not to be denied. And I talked about it in a bit of my preview stuff and talking with Ryan Phillips and even with Manny Rugumba. We interviewed him post-game outside the locker room. Every position group motivates one another. It feeds off each other. These guys are having fun, John, back and forth in practice, and that carries over into the game.
100%. And I doubt the mics are picking this up right now, but I can hear them playing four squares right underneath us in the locker room right now, yeah. Which is a game that they spend hours after practice right now playing, and just shows the culture and the bond this team has right now. And it is something special brewing right now for sure. And even the quarterback position is another position that we haven't even discussed yet, but it's one that Dane Evans came into the season as in a backup role after being traded here, and comes in on Saturday, throws for over 300 yards, immediately has that connection with Alexander Hollins, Keon Hatcher, guys that Vernon Adams had a pretty strong connection with prior to his injury 2 weeks ago. But this whole team, I think they've said it, the receiver room especially echoes this message, is that they don't care who gets the job done. It's just a matter that they do get the job done, and they're willing to celebrate each other's accomplishments. And the quarterback room is definitely demonstrating right now too. I thought Dane had a fantastic game. You know, Smoke Mizell coming back last week after Sean Shivers playing at running back. So it's just, it's layers of depth and contributions.
I even played the Foursquare game one time. I was down in the locker room. Yeah, I was down in the locker room doing something. I think it was Rhymes said, hey, Bake, you got to play. Come on. So I play. I think Dom Davis was one of the guys impressed with my hand-eye coordination. So, yeah, it just, you said it. Family, that's an example. Stephen Chang has written a nice piece on Quincy Mojé, our starting safety. He talks about how he hasn't felt this type of a family environment on a team since college, and that's high praise. He came from the Georgia Bulldogs, pretty elite program, right? So, yeah, you hit it on the head. And Dane Evans will start. Rick Campbell making that proclamation after Monday's practice. Again, recording this Monday after practice. There will just be one more practice before the team jets off to Winnipeg. But Rick, saying it without saying it, if it was a longer week, maybe Vernon Adams would be a bigger possibility. But this is just a product of one, maybe riding the hot hand a little bit. 330 passing yards, 25 of 32 completions. He completed his first eight passes for 118 yards. That was before the first quarter was even over. So a product of the schedule, and they obviously feel they can win short term here, at least with Dane Evans. And I kind of like this move, sticking with the hot hand and making sure Vernon's good to go with an extra long week of preparation. Won't be playing after until a week from Saturday, August 12th, with Calgary in town.
Yeah, and it's that luxury you have when having multiple quarterbacks who can win CFL games. I mean, all three of these guys, including Dom Davis, have proven that they can go out and win football games in this league. And Dane, yeah, like you said, last week proved it, and it just gives another week for Vernon to become 100%. It's only week 9 in the season, right? So it's not like it's do or die right now. It's just one more game, and like you said, Dane Evans is the hot hand definitely right now after what he did last week. Even this is one play that landed right in front of me, and I almost sick to my stomach when it happened. But the Keon Hatcher throw on the first drive, it's a play we saw.
Oh yeah,
it's a play we saw being schemed up throughout the weekend. Yeah, Jordan Maximick decided to call it, and he had Hollins wide open. So that just would have added to all the passing yards too, and I think that would have really delivered a statement early on. But It was good to see Dane still move the ball. You know, obviously Edmonton's penalties helped that out last week too. Probably not expecting that help from a Winnipeg team this week that quite frankly doesn't give up any mistakes like that. So the test is going to be more challenging this week. We haven't even gotten to like the environment that Winnipeg that delivers to when you go there, but it's all part of the fun of the CFL season.
Hatcher, the left-hander, too. Forgot about that.
Yeah, 50-yard throw, I think, that went. Yeah. Air yards? Yeah, it was crazy.
That would have been... Yeah, that place, again, 21 straight home losses. We're not here to pile on the Elks, but props to those fans who do show up. There was a lot of boo birds. You saw guys with garbage bags over their heads. And, hey, listen, I mean, we've all been... This team's been there as recently as 4 or 5 years ago, a lot of bad losses and really fallen on hard times. And you hope the Elks get things turned around. Of course, today they announced that Jarius Jackson will take over play calling duties from Stephen McAdoo as they go on a bye. It doesn't get any easier for them. They will be home to Winnipeg a week from Thursday after their bye week. So we shall see. Hey, there's two teams out there. Ultimately, you can't take any credit away from this Lions team. And for me, Nick, the big turning point, the floodgates really opened. Remember, moving the ball pretty well, but only kicking field goals in the first quarter. That touchdown bomb to Justin McInnes, some new life after a couple of Elks penalties kept the Lions offense on the field. When that play happened, it's like, okay, here we are. We're in business. We're going to come out of here pretty good. But it took a while for them to find the end zone. But when they did, it was a big play.
Yeah, Smoke Mizell also getting his first CFL touchdown on Saturday too. That's one I think that kind of maybe people didn't realize at the time because he's been producing every time he's been stepping on the field, but it just hasn't been able to find the end zone yet. And yeah, like once that I'm sure that's a key for Dane too, is making sure that especially in Winnipeg, you can't be going for threes every time. You got to be getting in the end zone and getting 6-7 points on your drives. I thought in week three at Winnipeg, we did a really good job of that. And it's going to be a formula they're going to have to repeat. One last thing about Edmonton too. One positive thing I want to say is I really like their in-game, especially their music. I think they have really good in-game music. I've been debating doing like a ranking system. I always like to geek out on that kind of stuff. And their in-game music is right up there at the top of the league. So I think even our players were enjoying it. There was a clip in the fourth quarter I got where
it was country night. It was country night, right?
But they were going a little bit of everything.
Were they? Yeah.
Warm up was all country.
I wasn't paying attention. I hear you though. I've always liked going to Calgary. They just seem to have a great mix, and they used to have that big speaker over top of the field. Edmonton has one of those now, the big speaker over midfield. So yeah. You're watching a game on TV, you really hear it coming through. Yeah, you should do those rankings. That should be.
I kind of learned the hard way in pregame of not shooting directly upwards. I was kind of like crouched for a pregame speech for TJ Lee, and when I listened back to it, the music is we can't use licensed music obviously in any of our content, or we have to avoid it at all costs kind of thing. But the music was blaring because I was shooting right up into that overhead speaker. So got to be those are some of the things you got to be cautious of. But yeah, it was a loud speaker, so. Good for the end game.
And think of the circumstances. The weather turned good. Wasn't too good when we got there. You came to the stadium when we landed on Friday, as did I, for TSN sit-downs. And our Operation Orange fan group, they couldn't go on the field because of the lightning warnings.
Yep.
And it got better. So it's, 5 o'clock start there, warm weather, good night to sit in the stands, have a beer, and take in the festivities. And yeah. You feel for those fans, you really do, but you're right. The people who were involved behind the scenes, certainly they haven't lost a step, and they're going to have to continue providing that great music and great entertainment, because as we've talked about here at length, there's more than just on the field. It's the entire game day experience. And you're right. The Edmonton Elks have a pretty good one. Lions and Blue Bombers Thursday. We're not going to have a guest on this episode. We just figured we'd come on and recap the win and look ahead to a big one. We can shift gears now. Thursday night. Yes, little quick turnaround for the Lions team, and they'll be facing a Winnipeg team coming off the bye, but that's the way it works. It seems every week at least one team is playing on a short week. This one, it happens to be us, and we're going to lay this out, Nick. You don't have to be a mathematician to figure out how big this is. And I saw a Blue Bomber fan on Twitter going on about, this game means more to the Lions than it does the Bombers, which is interesting because the Lions have already won a game in Winnipeg, like we talked about. That's over now. That's in the past. But I kind of chuckled at that because a Lions victory be 7-1. Winnipeg drops to 5-3. It's essentially would be a 6-point Lions lead because you'd also clinch the tiebreaker. So even with over half a season to go, that'd be a pretty steep hill for the Blue Bombers to climb. And a Lions loss, a win by Winnipeg means both would be 6-2. And it's pretty much a clean slate, sets up a heck of a race the rest of the way. So either way, either going to have a bit of a cushion or it's going to be set up for some more exciting football down the stretch. The teams will meet for a third time in early October at BC Place. I believe that's the third to last game of the year for the Lions for sure, because we have the bye at the end of October to wrap things up. But you tell me, who does this game mean more to?
Well, like, I was just going to say,
if you're Winnipeg, you need this game almost, right? To stay in that first place discussion, as crazy as that seems. But anyway, it doesn't matter. These are the two best teams in the West. They're going to be on a collision course right till the end. We pretty much know that. But it's up for debate who it matters more to.
It's a big debate because I think whichever storyline you want to go down, whatever route you want to go down, you can make the story for either team having more motivation going into this game. For BC, it's definitely that. Winnipeg's been the best. They've been the measuring stick these last 3 years, best in the West for sure, right? And I know, the Lions went in there in week three and made a big statement, but now they got to do it all over again. And I think if Winnipeg comes out and makes a statement on Thursday, then they can claim that they still have that crown, right? And then
Yeah.
Winnipeg's also really going to want, with what happened in week three, I'm sure Winnipeg is going to be extremely motivated to prove that they are still the best in this league, and Claris and company and the veterans they have, they're going to be roaring to put out a better performance, because in week three, 7 sacks for the Lions, like Claris didn't finish the game, had only just over 200 yards of passing. That's not what you expect from Winnipeg. And you got to give credit to Ryan Phillips and the defense, and especially Matthew Betts with the hat trick, is Sione Tuihama contributing, Menard off the edge. Like our D linemen were all over them, and we won the physicality battle throughout the entire game. And that's something that's going to be a key, obviously, on Thursday. And Winnipeg's a team that can, they play bully ball from time to time too, right, with Oliveira and their offensive line too. So I think whoever gets off on the right foot in that matchup is going to be set to win this game. And it's something that both teams are going to be really focusing on, right?
Yeah, and you're right. That really was a clinic on physicality, particularly up front. And we hadn't seen that Blue Bombers offensive line get beat badly like that for years, right? You know, you go back to whatever they were, 23-2 the last 3.5 years. A lot of that is due to the play of the Hogs, the Jamarcus Hardricks, the Stanley Bryants, the Pat Neufelds, Michael Couture came from over there, and he talked about how they set the standard as far as offensive line play, and they did. You're right. I mean, Winnipeg, they're going to be an angry bunch. For as much as Rick Campbell has preached that nothing was determined there in week three, you know, Winnipeg argues the same thing. You know, it's a team that's played deep into November and December the last 2-3 seasons. And, you know, maybe as a result of that, you get caught napping every once in a while in June or July. Maybe that's just it. These veteran teams, and whether it's CFL, NFL, the Kansas Cities, the New Englands of years past, they had the odd slip up in September and October. And it's like, well, as long as we right this ship come playoff time. So, yeah, this will be the Lions' toughest test yet. I do not foresee a win by 24 points, but this Lions team has definitely surprised me a few times this season. Pleasantly surprised me in a good way, of course, as we talk about a team that is 6-1. And really, if you told this Lions team at the start of the year through 7 games, you'd have the win in Winnipeg, you'd be undefeated in the division, you'd have a 2-point cushion on first place, you say, yeah, we'll take that every day, every time. But they have to keep that going, at least 2 more matchups with the Blue Bombers. Some storylines here for me, though, Nick. Remember that last meeting? Lions, we were without Dominique Rimes. That was our main piece that was not available that night. Didn't matter in the end. The Blue Bombers were without the likes of Jackson Jeffcoat. Kyrie Wilson, their linebacker, has been out for over a year. He's practicing this week, so they haven't had him there. Very good player. Remember, Brady Oliveira was limited that whole week in practice, but he ended up coming out and playing and picking up some yards on the opening drive for sure. Because remember, Winnipeg led that game 3-0. They came out and the Lions held them to a field goal, and that was kind of an early wake-up call before they got things right on defense. But both teams essentially, I think, here, minus the Lions starting quarterback, of course, should be at more full strength compared to the last meeting.
I was just about to get into that, so I don't know if you're looking at my screen right now or something, because yeah, I have the injury report right in front of me.
I don't go over other people's research, Nick. Not yet.
Not screen peeking. But yeah, Dominique Rimes, full participant today with the knee injury that kept him out last week. I know Coach Campbell did say that it was more precautionary with Rimes not playing at Edmonton last week. So good to see Rimes and the Lion Kings back all healthy this week, presumably in Winnipeg. But yeah, like you said, Kenny Lawler is also a name that's back for Winnipeg that was not there in week 3.
Can't forget him, yeah.
Yeah, I know RP and the DBs are going to be really scheming for him this week, one of the best receivers in this league. Dalton Schoen did not practice for Winnipeg on Sunday, but he was limited today with a hip injury. So I think you heard it against Edmonton coming down on a catch before their bye week, but he's also obviously a difference maker, scored a few touchdowns against us last season, so cannot forget about him. And then another guy for Winnipeg, Winston Rose, is a full participant. He hasn't played all season like Kyrie Wilson, a veteran player there, playmaker. Winston's kind of the flashy guy where, yeah, he makes a lot of turnovers, whereas Kyrie Wilson kind of does it under the radar and kind of falls in that Josh Banks category, where one of the most underappreciated players in this league, I'd say. But Kyrie Wilson's also, people forget, Grey Cup winning interception. So, I mean, in the big moments, he's proven that he can step up too. So it's good though. Like, you want to see both teams, especially at this caliber, these two teams, two of the best in the league, you want to see them at their healthiest, right, when they go head to head. So it's good to see everybody getting back healthy here.
And Kyrie Wilson's injury took place last season in Toronto. That was actually right before the first Lions Bombers meeting at BC Place. That's the motivation too, right? Winnipeg was on a crazy short week that week. Lions weren't coming off a bye, and you saw how Winnipeg kind of took it to us. So, and yeah, Winston Rose, you said it there, Mr. Reliable. We had him here in 2018, and he ultimately signed with Winnipeg, won a couple Grey Cups in 2019 and 2021. And he had a big interception against Nathan Rourke in the Western Final. The second quarter of the Western Final kind of snuffed out a lot of momentum before halftime. So that's a guy you always have to be aware of. Jordan Maksimek, Jason Tucker, going to be zeroing in on that, of course, as their game preparation continues. So all adds up to be a pretty good heavyweight fight when we're talking about all these guys coming back. And yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Lawler, because he was a difference maker against the Elks a couple weeks ago. Remember, that game was 6-6 in the second half, and they had to rely on a couple of the big plays. And clearly, Zach Collaros and Kenny Lawler have reestablished that chemistry that they had going in that magical 2021 campaign. So, yeah, this is if you're a pure fan of football, you can't beat a regular season circumstance like this one.
Yeah, the corner talk too. We bring up how well Gary Peters is playing this year, and frankly, the past couple of years, and how he's maybe at the top of his position. There's DeMario Houston in Winnipeg, who is this new emergent as a new cornerback this season. And I believe, I don't have the number in front of me, but I believe Houston's forced 9 turnovers this season. So for Winnipeg, so he is on a ridiculous pace, and he's proving as one of the best corners in this league. And I think that's why this week he's actually going to be staying as the boundary corner for Winnipeg, and Winston's going to be playing the field, which is something that most teams do, right? Like I believe we're the only team where Gary lines up on the left, Jalen's on the right, and they don't swap for cornerbacks. I think talking to Gary and Jalen, they see that as an advantage. They got their angles and their visions are all always the same. So they play it in RP, obviously trust them to perform in that situation. So there's just so many good battles to key on in this game, whether it's the line of scrimmage, the corners, the receivers, hell, the quarterbacks, right? Collaros and Evans have quite a history, right? Playing in great cups against each other. And
that's right.
So it's a really cool, storylines in this game.
Yeah. And I imagine that'll be a big storyline from a Winnipeg standpoint. Their beat writers and reporters who cover the team very well will be zeroing in on that. And I even heard Mike O'Shea talking about it after his post-practice availability on Sunday. He says, yeah, even though Dane's been in the East Division, it feels like we've faced him several times over the years. And that's true when you factor in the 2019 and the 2021 Grey Cup matchups. Thursday, 5:30 Pacific time, AM 7:30, Lions Audio Network. Moj and Julio will have the call. The team will depart on Wednesday morning, 10 a.m. The Monday and Tuesday practice. Wednesday, they'll meet a little bit and do some stuff preparation-wise. And yeah, it's a situation we were in. Winnipeg, again, wasn't coming off the bye, but the last time there was also a Thursday night. The Lions had just shut out Edmonton on Saturday, only that time being at home and not on the road. So maybe that's a good omen that this defense is coming off a stellar performance, because they're going to need to have perhaps their best performance yet. Before we get out of here, Nick, again, no guest today. It's been fun previewing this matchup and just talking about this historic run the defense has put on. You want to go? You want to talk about a Lions player that you feel is flying under the radar?
Yeah, we did this the other week, right? With I think I mentioned Jalen Edwards-Cooper. You had Josh Banks, I believe you went with for years.
Yep.
I was browsing special teams tackles this there today, actually, just to see who's up there on our team. And it is Joshua Archibald leading our team in special teams tackles. That's not who I want to give the shout out to, though, but I just want to say Arch is That's one of the guys we've seen, I think, in the second season having a great development, especially in a special teams role. But the guy I want to give a little love to is Ryder Varga. So Ryder Varga is tied for a second on our team with 6 special teams tackles. But where what really impressed me was just by looking at these stats today was that Ryder has 0 missed tackles on special teams, which is, I think that's a pretty impressive feat so far. You see a lot of blown tackles. That was a big storyline, obviously, with our team last year. And Ryder is obviously playing in his first full season with the Lions and has been pretty stellar on the team so far. And I think the team's overall has been improved so far this season, which is another nod to Mike Benavides this season. But Ryder, someone came with a lot of pedigree as a CanWest player of the year with Regina, and now stepping up to the CFL level, also probably learning behind Bola Cumbo, Ben Halatic as Canadian linebackers. And it's just good to see Ryder, thriving in his current role so far.
Yeah, well said. I did a pregame interview on Ched Radio with the Elks Radio Network pregame on Saturday. And that was a talking point, just how much this Canadian content has gotten better. And Varga, again, does it very quietly, but definitely worthy of that. I want to give some love. I'm going to stay on the defensive line like I did last time. You mentioned I was thinking about Josh Archibald as well. It's the numbers are one thing, but you watch him. His pursuit is outstanding. He gets there quick, right? And that's part of playing the role. That's part of playing special teams. Are you willing to get rough? Are you willing to get in a car wreck every time you're out there? And I think Josh Archibald epitomizes that. But Sione Tuhema, quietly getting it done. Matthew Betts, Josh Banks, who we talked about last time. These are the guys getting a lot of the accolades. But Sione, so far this season, he has 3 sacks. You know, his tackle totals aren't maybe as high as some of the others. But again, those guys are playing as a unit. And Sione, a guy who's here in his second year with the team, you're just seeing how much it's benefited him. An extra year in this system, an extra year with RP, and such a quiet player, but an effective player.
Definitely. And I think he's the reason that Tuihema is here is that made the decision in preseason with Sean Lemon and Jonathan Kongbo a lot more easier. And even Boom Gwacham not returning this defense and RP and John Bowman, they knew they had Sione Tuihema and found kind of a hidden gem with Sione, obviously, last season. And yeah, like you said, quietly doing his business, racking up sacks still. It's good to see.
Excellent. Always love highlighting some of those who maybe aren't getting as many accolades. All right. Anything more to finish off with?
Nope. I'm excited for this one. I had week 3 circled, then I definitely have week 9 circled now too. This is going to be a good one.
And the next one will probably be week 18, I believe it will be. But let's get this one out of the way. A lot of football to be played before the Blue Bombers come to BC Place. And again, the Lions can get another victory here. They've set themselves up nicely for the second half of the season. Now, First and Now is the official BC Lions podcast. As always, be sure to rate, leave a review, subscribe, tell your friends about it. You know, we hear people saying there's not enough CFL content, not enough podcasts out there. Well, that's one of the reasons why we do this, to keep you great Lions fans and CFL fans who listen up to date on what's happening with the team. We'll be back next week to recap this one and then get ready for Legends Night, Wall of Fame Night, Lions and Stampeders at BC Place. Get your tickets. Plenty of great ticketing option. The Coors Light Den, a good social area. Youth tickets, a kids ticket, 17 and under for $10. Parents can join them for $20. Our sideline seats, a major hit added in the last couple of years. Head to bclions.com and click on the tickets tab, and everything is at your disposal info-wise. This has been First and Now, the official BC Lions podcast.